This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. Today's podcast is being recorded in the offices of Raider Solutions. Raider creates and maintains technical strategies for businesses of all sizes across the country, as well as right here in Lafayette, functioning as their complete IT department. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'm very proud to welcome Iberia Bank as Discover Lafayette's premier sponsor. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana and is headquartered here in Lafayette. With 329 combined locations throughout the South, they offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Iberia Bank supports educational, cultural, and business development efforts that make a difference in the many communities they serve, including sponsoring this podcast. For more information, please visit iberiabank.com. Marcus Brown is our guest today. Well known throughout Louisiana for the talent he brings to our entertainment industry, Marcus is also known throughout the U.S. and abroad for the various roles he has performed in more than 78 feature films and television series. Some of the big names he has appeared alongside include Sandra Bullock, Halle Berry, Diane Kruger, Jim Carrey, Billy Bob Thornton, Sean Penn, and many more. You've probably seen him in the Academy Award-winning film 12 Years a Slave. I believe that one of the most moving scenes that Marcus has contributed to in our cultural experience is during The Great Debaters, directed and starred in by Denzel Washington. In 2007, Marcus's company, Believe Entertainment, created and managed the Lafayette Entertainment Initiative, which was designed to promote Lafayette as a prime destination for creative content production. He was also involved, through Believe Entertainment, in the strategic planning for Create. Currently, Marcus serves as Chief Marketing Officer of Digital Twin Studios, which is housed here in the Light Center in the Opportunity Machine. The company designs immersive and interactive safety training. So, Marcus, we have a lot to discuss, but welcome to Discover Lafayette.
Well, thanks for having me, Jen.
Yeah, I enjoyed researching you. We met through Joey Durrell when you were with the Lafayette Entertainment Initiative. Mm-hmm. And I know we would cross paths through Leadership Lafayette, and you're always giving back to the community. So it's an honor to get, you know, to hear your story and let you share what you're doing. So,
well, thank you. You as well. Just watching, you know, what you do in the community and how involved you are, the community is much better for it. So thank you.
Thank you. Well, I saw that you're a fellow LSU graduate. Mm-hmm. You, let me see if I've got your background. Two Bachelor of Arts degrees in Communication and Theater, a Master of Fine Arts and Performance, and you also worked on a doctoral fellowship in Communication and Media Studies. So That's quite a bit of training for what you've been doing.
Yeah, it's been, I was a career student, for lack of a better word.
Well, your parents are teachers, right?
True.
So
yeah.
I'm sure they encouraged that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I still do.
Yeah. Did you come back here? I don't know your early history. Can you talk about after college? What took place?
Sure. Well, I was in my fellowship year at LSU, and for some reason, I looked at the community, and they were starting the Louisiana Community and Technical College system.
Right.
And so at that point, I looked at, they were starting South Louisiana Community College. So I made a phone call and just to inquire about it. And the chancellor of the institution answered the phone.
I knew they had a light staff.
But it was a very light staff. I think it was somewhere between 3 or 5 at the time. And so he answered the phone and we started to talk and he asked me a little bit about myself. And he said, wait a minute, your grandmother taught me in the third grade. She taught me how to read.
Wow.
So I said, we need to talk. And so I went down and we sat and chatted and he talked to me about his vision. And I thought that every day you don't get a chance to be a part of starting a community college and of starting a new system.
Right.
So I took advantage and I was there for at South Louisiana Community College for about 8 years. And as an academic and an educator, that was a great, great experience. Mm-hmm. And I still miss academia because of what we were able to accomplish in that time frame.
Talk about that. What did you teach?
I taught communication, speech communication, theater. I was instructor of record for a number of programs. So at the time, the tax incentives for the state of Louisiana came into being around 2002, and I started there, I think, in 1998.
Oh,
so after
timing.
A couple of years, you know, a lot of the individuals that were looking for workforce development training inside the system needed some areas, some subject matter expertise. So they called me into the system office and said, listen, we're about to launch these tax credits, but we don't have a workforce development training program. You are in the industry as an actor, and so you do have the academic credentials. Would you be interested in helping us kind of coordinate that? And I said, absolutely.
Right.
We wrote a series of grants and funded almost a $2 million grant program through the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families grant program. And it got so successful and so positive that not only individuals who qualified for the program got involved, but we also got interest from individuals who could afford the program. So we had two tiers of training. Individuals who were incentivized to be there based upon some socioeconomic parameters, but also individuals who were willing and able to pay full tuition.
Right.
So it created a great learning experience with regard to being able to have individuals that were there for different reasons and coming from different backgrounds. So the learning experience really benefited from having that level of diversity. Some individuals who are tech savvy and other individuals who are not, and creating a level of collaboration within the classroom. Very proud of that work, and a lot of the individuals who came through that program are still now professionals in the industry.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen, you know, in preparing for this, I've somewhat stalked you on Facebook. Now I see why people like Facebook so much. You can find out just about anything, but I saw several of your past students. We'd call you out when they'd see you on TV. They were, you know, saluting you, and I know you do the same for them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Were you acting during that time when you were teaching?
Absolutely. I've been an actor, at least professionally, for around 20 years. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this transition for me was good.
Right. You had a day job, and you could still pursue your dream.
Yeah. I always, you know, kind of, you know, created some professional aspirations that kept me inside the entertainment industry one way or another. So whether it was video game development or film production or even sometimes music production training programs from an academic side and then into the private sector, it was really how do I create a level of balance? But then my professional work as an actor also complemented that.
Right.
So it worked out really well.
I read that in 1996 you were involved with Steven Soderbergh, and I'm assuming you were taping in Baton Rouge, and he encouraged you to look at staying home. Like, you don't not that you couldn't go to Hollywood, but that you don't have to be in Hollywood to make movies. And my reading on that, it really intrigued me, because when you started your work with SLCC and your young acting career, that is when Louisiana was starting to see that it could be a site for great movies to be made. Would you talk about that? I mean, did you see yourself going off to California? That's what most people think when they're young. It's, you know, I'm gonna go off to New York or Hollywood.
Yeah, short answer, yes. When I first started, you know, the experience that you mentioned, I was doing a short film and I was actually graduating from my master's program, and Steven Soderbergh had cast a number of actors in a experimental film that he was working on. And one day after shooting, he said, you know, the main reason that I did this film was to show people that you don't have to be in Los Angeles. You don't have to be in Hollywood to make movies.
Is he a Baton Rouge?
Yes.
He's a Baton Rouge native.
Right.
So I know that was important to him.
Right. His family's from there. Sex, Lies, and Videotape was taken in Baton Rouge, right on LSU's campus. So that was very challenging to me, where, you know, you think you have to go somewhere else to start something or be involved in something. And, you know, those are two different paths, but because of the timing, as you mentioned, and the tax credits, all of a sudden the opportunities were coming to Louisiana.
Right.
And I was a larger fish in a small pond. So there was a lot of opportunities that were created for me by being here and having the training and having the desire that I did to do that kind of work. So there, you know, as you mentioned, you know, there's been a number of films that I've been in, and so many individuals out in Los Angeles are surprised or think that I was in Los Angeles for quite some time to amass that resume. And it was really because of the tax credit program and how successful it was.
I think I read at one point there were more films made in Louisiana than in Hollywood in 1 year, but that's changed. The tax credit situation for the state of Louisiana was reversed around 2014. Is that right?
Exactly. There was a lull, and, you know, through no fault of any of the individuals who were connected to that process, it created a, there was a need to put a cap on the tax credit program, unfortunately. When there was no cap, the sky was the limit.
But we gave away a lot of money.
Yes, yeah. Great deal. And from our circumstance, because we were dealing with the economic impacts of the energy sector at the same time, our fiscal management as a state really did not allow us to give an open-ended cap. So having that kind of fiscal responsibility was necessary, but it also limited our capacity to handle major projects. Mm-hmm. So we started to adjust that a bit, and I had to testify to the, I think it was the Senate Finance Committee, in support of the adjustment. Because 1 year, the new tax credit legislation morphed into something that was not very manageable. And we lost a lot of production activity, a significant amount, and we lost it a lot to Georgia. So the program had to reinvent itself. Mm-hmm. And during that reinvention, that's where we currently are, within a process that is manageable. It won't be the same as it once was, but it is a growing, we're rebounding from that experience.
Mm-hmm. Where are we now? Like, what does the state offer for people? Do you know parameters of what they can offer in any
sure.
year?
Without being, with the disclaimer that I'm not,
you didn't
monitoring the program, and I don't have any jurisdiction over it. We're looking at, I think it's about, 20% plus. Well, let me put it this way. There are a number of different incentives within the tax credit program. There's employee incentives, there are labor incentives, regional incentives. There's an additional 5% if you're shooting outside the metropolitan area of New Orleans. But there's also a cap on the amount of incentives that you can accrue. Mm-hmm. So that cap is 40%. You can utilize any of those incentives in different combinations that you qualify for, but they will never, at least in this legislative version, will mm-hmm. not go across 40% in those tax credits. So achieving a 40% tax credit is the ceiling.
Yeah, and that's probably tough to do.
But it's incentivized.
Yeah.
You know, it is challenging, but if you're shooting outside of New Orleans, then it spreads the economic impact outside of New Orleans to the mm-hmm. other areas in the community. In the state of Louisiana, if you're employing more individuals who are native citizens, there's an additional tax credit there. There are opportunities to create a qualified entertainment company that's servicing the entertainment industry, creating more quality jobs by having full-time staff members that support mm-hmm. the entertainment industry. So there are a number of different incentives that are there. It's just maximizing those and thinking, strategically and creatively, but they're all designed to create a long-term impact as opposed to something immediate and transitory that then you're having to reinvent mm-hmm. itself every single time.
I know last year Lafayette had at least two, if not, I know more than I do, some local films made. One of my young friends, Cassie Doyle, mm-hmm. She wrote two scripts that were picked up by Lifetime, and one was taped here, and
okay.
you were in a film last year that was taped here in Lafayette, right? You taped last summer?
Yes. I think it was the Christmas Contract. I think so.
Is that it?
There were a
yeah.
number of them. A friend of mine, Griff First, was looking at moving from New Orleans to Lafayette mm-hmm. And looking at that additional production incentive. So he contacted me and said, listen, do you think we can do something in Lafayette? I said, I think so. So I contacted all the stakeholders, LCVC, LEDA, LCG, and the Lafayette Public Trust and Financing mm-hmm. Authority, and looked at some creative ways to create a production incentive that would attract independent production companies once yeah. again, the way that we did when we started LEI.
Mm-hmm.
And we created a package, kind of looked at it in different ways that everyone would be able to contribute mm-hmm. in some way that was based upon the economic impact.
Right.
And we put together a pretty good package. And that was January of last year. And because of that, Curmudgeon Films landed mm-hmm. in town. And I think, this is my estimation, but immediately thereafter, we got interest from other production companies
right.
that wanted to land in the area as well. Ironically, a number of those individuals in some way, shape, or form were affiliated or had worked with myself and or Griff.
Mm-hmm.
So they were aware of what we were doing and how we were successful in putting a package together that was attractive enough
right.
to look at Lafayette again. And I think the product of that work was all those films that you
yeah.
saw last summer. So
people
we're
love
proud
that.
To have that. Yeah,
it's just so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
I guess the film industry is just so glamorous. I feel like I could just gush over this. You must have had so much fun meeting some of the people you've met. I know your work is serious, But just meeting some of the stars you've met, you know, incredible people. Denzel Washington, some of the people you've worked with. I loved watching online. You have like an 8-minute montage of some of your work. I think it was from 2014 and before. Mm-hmm. And I looked at some of the things you had done, but you have worked with some outstanding actors. Do you want to talk about some of that?
Sure. You know, a lot of the individuals, you know, as I looked at the transition to Digital Twin Studios and really taking on the CMO role, I kind of looked back at my career and said, you know, I think I've kind of worked with almost everyone I wanted to work with. You know, the ones who come to mind are Denzel Washington and Anthony Hopkins and Al Pacino, Forrest Whitaker.
Forrest Whitaker, really
great guy. So looking back at those experiences, I learned so much as an actor watching these veterans and individuals who work so much. But also being able to see that these same individuals are really good people as well. I mean, everyone in every industry, you have your different personalities, but I can tell you that the individuals that I've mentioned were really interesting and fun to work with. And I learned a lot. You know, when you're working as much as they are and you have such an impact, I just can't tell you. Anthony Hopkins was just, you know, a joy to be around and watch him work, but just so engaging and so friendly and down to earth. He made the entire cast and crew. I think the film was Misconduct, and so it was Anthony Hopkins and Al Pacino who were the two leads.
Oh my gosh.
So it was a really, really good experience. Yeah. So, I've been very blessed, for lack of a better word, to be able to pursue that level of artistry and work with that caliber of individuals. So I'm not in want of saying I wish I would have or wish I could have. It's been a really good ride.
But you're not closing that door.
I'm not closing that door, but I'm not locking that door.
Okay.
I'm closing it.
It's closed for the moment.
It's closed. I told my agent, you know, I was like, we're just gonna full focus on this. It's a startup, you know. Digital Twin Studios is a startup. It takes a lot of focus and energy, and I believe in what's happening and what we're doing. And as a former educator, being able to blend my experience in video game development and the entertainment industry as well as education, we have an opportunity to make such a positive impact and look at how we can make an exponential impact, a viral impact on learning, where you have technology that is truly allowing you to achieve up to 90% information retention because of how you're engaging the content, how you're engaging the learning. So it's really been an interesting ride for me because, you know, being in video game development previously, I could see these, you know, the virtual goggles and, you know, everything else as it kind of grew. And I'm like, okay, I get that. I know what that is. It's for fun. It's for play. Video games don't have a lot of time, so I'm not even going to put them on. And I didn't. Until I started interacting with Digital Twin Studios and they let me know what they were doing, it was really intriguing that that technology could be utilized for workforce development and training and just learning. And so we're working on a project with the Pew Family Foundation locally.
Oh, really?
And really working on a project to enhance reading comprehension in kids grades 3 through 5. And so having that level of insight and interaction, I mean, there's such an impact. So I'm teaching in a different way and engaging technology in a different way. So it's really been interesting.
So let me back up and say Digital Twin Studios is here in Lafayette. You're in the Light Center. And so you're not just working with businesses. I know that's probably your main focus, to allow people to become immersed in what their job may be. And the employer can see if they're capable of doing the job. And then the employee or trainee retains the skills that are needed. And so could you give an example of what type of industry? You're saying maybe oil and gas or different types of industries. What would be an example of a job that would be, that would want to use Digital Twin Studios?
Sure. For example, you know, Lafayette, you know, is an oil and gas centric community, and there are a lot of safety compliance and certifications that individuals need to go through. And sometimes they've been in the field for years, and now they're required to have some refresher training. A lot of times, what is occurring in the oil and gas sector is very specific and very dangerous, sometimes or risky. So if we're able to create or recreate an experience that can show individuals how to function in a very risky environment, in a safe environment, mm-hmm. then that is a significant cost benefit, but it's also a significant safety or proficiency benefit to that experience. So if you're, you know, placing a safety zone around a particular piece of oil equipment or energy equipment, and now you need to make sure that you've cordoned that area off appropriately, you can actually see that, create the tags, and then make sure that you're able to create a safe environment. Mm-hmm. But if you don't do it correctly, we can show individuals the consequences for what can happen, whether it's an explosion or some type of injury that can occur. Mm-hmm. So it kind of reinforces that experience. But we're also able to show a level of proficiency where we can create virtual tools, whether it's a wrench or interacting with a screwdriver uh-huh. or any type of other experience where the learner feels as though they're actually going through that training. You're feeling the different materials. Are you in that environment? It's mm-hmm. a really heavily beneficial experience because it's the way the brain works. A college roommate of mine who's a neurosurgeon in town, he mentioned that, you know, there's a particular reason why immersive learning works so well. And it's because of how the brain functions and how it retains information. For example, if you're in a learning environment and you're trying to retain information, a lot of your distractions in the environment are picking up or distracting you from retaining that information. Mm-hmm. And it's drawing oxygen to the amygdala region of your brain. Mm-hmm. And so that's where your fear receptors are.
Right, lizard. But,
right. Mm-hmm. So then in an immersive environment, it immediately starts to fire and activate your hippocampus region, mm-hmm. where your learning receptors are. But at the same time, restricting oxygen flow to your amygdala. So now your brain is focusing more so on the learning while also restricting the distractions from causing you to not retain the information. So it's really about your brain being able to create these experiential memories mm-hmm. from a learning environment, as opposed to watching something in PowerPoint in a classroom and you can be distracted by
Studying at the library and listening
exactly.
to music.
Or a coffee
shop,
et cetera.
Yeah, she's not getting what she needs.
Yes.
I mean, I shouldn't say that.
Exactly.
But I can't focus if I have sounds around me. And I think it's because of that. I'm easily distractible. But if I sit down and focus, I mean, mm-hmm. I can get more done in an hour than 8 hours in a busy place. Do they do this over and over? Do the people that are trained, is it a program that they take from Digital mm-hmm. Twin Studios so they can go through it over and over, these employees?
Yes. We take some of the content and place it in a learning management system. They can look at it online on a desktop, mm-hmm. or if they have the virtual equipment, we can have them access it inside the virtual environments. Mm-hmm. So they can do it a number of times until they become to reach a level of proficiency. And it also allows us to track that environment as well, track different movements. We're working on placing multiplayers in that environment so we could actually be in this space that's virtual, interacting with different mm-hmm. tools within that environment. And so if you needed an apprentice or some individual to shadow someone else, you can shadow them in that environment as well. So it's really sky's the limit. It's really a growing industry, and it's really become viral in 2018 mm-hmm. where you're seeing enterprise level work force development really embrace the technology.
And I can just imagine the unlimited potential, Marcus, mm-hmm. with universities, with SLCC and certification training.
Exactly. We've had, you know, very good conversations with mm-hmm. Institutions within the LCTCS, the Louisiana Community mm-hmm. Technical College System. We're also working on a grant project with members from the University of Louisiana Lafayette to look at, you know, the next generation of that research. So mm-hmm. it is being embraced, and as a community, we're embracing it. So we're really happy to be a part of that and being one of the champions of that technology
right.
within the community.
Right. And then the little people, my last question, training little ones to read better, mm-hmm. to read and then to retain mm-hmm. the 3 to 5 year olds. Is it an at-home program, or do they go to a special place for the reading?
Actually, the Pew Family Foundation started a tutoring program within the Lafayette Parish School System's Transformation Zone. And within that transformation zone, it's predominantly at-risk students or at-risk populations. Mm-hmm. And so it gives us the opportunity to work with some hardware called Class VR, which is owned out of a company called Avantis Education out of the UK. And that hardware is specifically designed for classroom training. So we're building environments within that for that hardware mm-hmm. to assist in some of the fundamental reading skills, to help them see how to read, how mm-hmm. to identify different settings, characters, etc., but also being able to track where their struggles are and hopefully be able to easily and almost automatically prompt if they're struggling on a word. Mm-hmm. And so therefore they get a word, they get the pronunciation, the definition, and then they can move on. And
right.
It's actually allowing us
but
to track their it tracks their reading.
Uh-huh.
Exactly, one at a time. So mm-hmm. we're really excited about
that's
that.
That's great.
Because, you know, we're able to create a pre-test and a post-test and really make an impact. Of course, individuals who are more tech savvy and individuals who don't have any problems reading, you may see some significant benefit as well, mm-hmm. but you can see some exponential benefit for
right.
individuals who are challenged. And now you see a proof of concept that is being embraced by an area that may not have a lot of those technological applications or technological access.
Mm-hmm.
And starting there creates a great opportunity for it to impact the entire community and the entire system. As well, you know, we hopefully are able to scale that to a national and international scale.
Right.
And our partners are looking forward to see what we come up with.
Good timing with the state's focus mm-hmm. on pre-K. You
Absolutely.
Know, get the little ones to get them up to speed before they start pre-K.
Exactly.
So, yeah, well, we're here with Jason Sikora at Raider Solutions. I do want to put in another plug for Raider. And Jason, thank you for taping us today.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
You've been really writing some notes.
I've got a few notes here. I've got a couple questions. Yeah. First of all, what's the website for the new company?
It's digitaltwinstudios.com.
Oh, that's easy enough. Pretty straightforward. So, Marcus, I met you, I think it was about 8 years ago.
Wow.
Right? It's been that
yes.
long. And we've constantly kind of run into each other around Lafayette. But when I first met you, one of the things that you were working on was maybe trying to use the Lambda Rail or some sort of, remember that?
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Some sort of dedicated fiber line for transferring data mm-hmm. for movie productions from Louisiana back to California. And that was such like a novel idea in my head. Like, why hasn't somebody done this yet? And every time I run into you, it seems like you're always technology forward. You're always mm-hmm. trying to think of better ways to use the technology. So one of my questions was, is there anything coming down the line technology-wise that maybe you've run into that we don't know about? Like VR kind of came out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. Like we saw it kind of coming, and then all of a sudden Oculus Rift was there, and it just happened.
Right.
Is there anything that you're seeing that maybe is around the corner that might really change the game again?
It's not that, you know, I'm going to be limited and humble with regard to what I know or don't
okay,
know.
Fair enough.
But I think that it's not as much a technology killer, if you will, like an app killer, but it's the convergence of multiple technologies to be able to utilize in multiple applications.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at, you know, virtual reality, you look at AI, you look at machine learning, but you also look at blockchain technology.
Okay.
And some of the things that have been spoken about. And, you know, cryptocurrency is one thing, blockchain is another. Blockchain is the infrastructure on which cryptocurrency sits on. But the blockchain infrastructure, you know, I was fortunate enough to be invited to the MozFest a year and a half ago,
okay.
I think. Not this previous MozFest, but the one before that. And I really focused on blockchain, and that was held in London. So Mozilla, when they were here in town, invited, you know, their representatives invited me to their MozFest in London near the O2. And it was great to see how important and how much impact technological convergence is going to have. How do you leverage multiple pieces of technology through one platform or through one outlet? So I really do think it's about leveraging everything that's out there in the most innovative way. I think that's going to be the most disruptive opportunity. So imagine what we're doing in VR
mm-hmm.
And immersive learning, then being able to track individuals' learning across a spectrum, the educational continuum. If we can
mm-hmm.
start them in K-5,
oh yeah,
then we can track all of their learning and start getting industry certifications or looking
mm-hmm.
at their reading proficiency or their standardized test scores, et cetera.
Early.
Yeah.
And
then being able to advance
yeah.
through AI or
mm-hmm.
some machine learning and to anticipate or creating some predictive analysis of what their needs will be
right.
and what their needs are. But then also being able to track their abilities to be able to say, okay, we can track their entire process and see what they're available for, introducing them to new industries early enough.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so many individuals, even in our community, thinking that they have to leave
yeah.
in order to embrace some areas of some particular industry, but being able to have access to that via a virtual environment or just access to technology is really, really important. And I think that that convergence and that continued convergence is going to allow for that, as long as we don't turn into an episode of Black Mirror.
That's right. Yeah, we talked about Black Mirror earlier. I just really want Zoom in my eyes. Once I can get that, I'm set. Well, I'm glad that you mentioned blockchain as well, because we're getting more and more phone calls from doctors, insurance companies asking mm-hmm. about this, because they're starting to hear about it now when it comes to information sharing and change.
Right.
So I do think that there's not a whole lot of information that's easy to read out there about blockchain. It's very confusing, but it is, I think, going to change things a little bit for some industries. I wanted to talk just briefly about tax credits as well. Mm-hmm. The tax credit cap, how does that work for production? Is that per production, or is it per production company, or how is that managed?
It's managed through the application process, so they do a lot of front-end loading to that process where you have to apply for the tax credit and you pay for your application fee, which is a particular price point. It's a couple thousand dollars. Uh-huh. But in that process, once you're approved and certified, then it places you in the queue of when you can redeem your tax credits based upon mm-hmm. other individuals who've applied. So every year, there's $180 million available. So if the state reaches their cap of $180 million for that year, and you have not recouped your tax credits by that time frame, then you go into the queue the following year, and then you're having to accrue those tax credits at that time frame. And it's based upon the year that you've actually certified your tax credits.
Gotcha.
So it's a system to manage mm-hmm. how much money we're spending, and basically individuals getting in line to become certified to embrace that opportunity.
Gotcha.
And do we lose talent because of that sometimes, if people are waiting and there's somebody that they want to have in a movie or a video or, you know, a music production? And
well, not necessarily, but I do see your question, mm-hmm. and I think that it does have an impact. For example, a lot of the studios who have multi-million dollar budgets, because we have a cap, mm-hmm. they're less apt to apply or actually film in the state of Louisiana because it does have a cap, and they're not able to manage or project when they're going to receive their tax
right.
credit. So they may go to another area that has an open cap, like Georgia, to do that. But with television production that is consistent, and the state of Louisiana has now a 5-year super tax credit for television and film production, that gives them that some latitude to really mm-hmm. kind of plan out their production schedule. And you're seeing a lot more independent production activities that are not going to reach that cap.
Is so Netflix TV, or what are they considered? Netflix and Prime.
You know, without being the dictionary of that, you know,
I'm asking you some
process,
tough questions.
Yeah, it would be, you know, I would say they're really looking at themselves. I would say they're looking at themselves as a mini studio, because they're the entire process. They're
seems, you know, like it. They do, because they don't just do series. They do movies as well,
and yeah. original movies, etc.
They're a production company as well as an online streaming
right.
service.
Yes.
So that, I mean, they're kind of. They're throwing everything in and then seeing what's happening. And
exactly. Lionsgate used to see themselves as a mini studio. And,
oh,
you know, so, and that's their, you know, they're not Warner Brothers, not Universal, and they don't have the theatrical infrastructure. I think Netflix really kind of made a push to see if they could launch day and date releases in the theater as well as online. And I think they've kind of abandoned that mm-hmm. model to really look at a streaming content. You look at Bird Box, you know, the numbers that they received on that film. They don't necessarily need to be in the theaters. So,
we like to be on our couch.
We do.
Exactly.
We do.
Exactly. Just before we can talk about Netflix all afternoon if you want to. I mean, that's cool with me. Well, no, I heard an interesting point. And when they first started doing the TV shows, they said that they see a day where we're not going to have episodes anymore. And I thought that was interesting. Hmm. Where it's just a... You end it where you want to end it and come pick it back up the next day.
God.
So it's this 12 hours of something. But when you look at the way they produce TV shows or series, mm-hmm. there's always two or three different timelines going on mm-hmm. and plots, and they only solve one of them at the end. Mm-hmm. So you kind of have to watch the next one. Mm-hmm. Or you just... So I think we're going to see more of that as well when it comes to Netflix, Hulu. Disney is now throwing mm-hmm. their hat in the game.
Yeah, well, you see, you know, you look at creative content and what your objective is. You're trying to create and maintain a captive audience. How do you maintain that over the long term? how does a studio take the Guardians of the Galaxy or the Marvel series and create this universe that individuals will continue to consume. Star Wars, for example, you're taking an intellectual property and you're expanding it across a number of different, you know, deliverables, whether it's feature films to animation, action figures, etc. I guess the same scenario when you're looking at an episodic content, you're trying to, how do I keep the audience involved? How do I keep them coming back? Who am I resonating with? What characters am I resonating with? What storyline am I resonating with? So Netflix, as we know, they're doing a great deal of data analysis of when do individuals stop watching content and what type of content are they watching? When do they pick it back up? So a lot of that will obviously inform the creative process as well, to respond to the trends and the viewing habits of their audience to maintain that level of engagement. I know there's a couple of episodes that I've been watching recently of Black Earth Rising, for example, and they grab you so well, but then when the episode ends, they don't want you to stop. So if you don't grab that remote quick
five
enough,
seconds.
Right to the next episode.
Keep you going. It's and you really have to be disciplined enough to make sure that you press stop.
And the next day rolls around.
Right, exactly. Yeah. You know, so
well, and that's an interesting point because networks never really had that kind of data analysis before.
Right.
Where once the computer came around and you were able to stream, they could capture all that information.
Yes. Nielsen has changed.
Yes. So they got ahead of the curve.
Yes.
So are we going to basically see, I mean, every channel have their own online streaming?
It seems as though we're already moving in that direction, whether it's, you know, Stars to TNT to National Geographic, etc. They want that extended audience. How do we continue to keep them engaged? And so, you know, if you're launching a new network, I wouldn't see anyone who would not have the equivalent streaming service connected to it, because you want to keep that captive audience, because then you're able to leverage that advertising mechanism or whatever your bottom line is. And it's about, look at how many users we're holding in a time frame, and look at how many ways we're holding that audience. So that's where their value is.
Interesting, that makes sense. I could talk forever, but thank you, Marcus, for being here. I appreciate it. And Jen, thank you for letting me ask some questions.
Oh, thank you. And your questions triggered one thing I meant to ask you about Create. I know that you, Yvette, your wife, and Believe Entertainment worked with the local government, our city parish government, on the strategic plan for Create. Why do you think that's important? I know some people have questioned it, but you're a proponent and you live the arts.
Yeah, no. Well, when Joel, you know, discussed the opportunity of trying to find a mechanism to turn the creative economy into economic drivers for the community, you know, let's be honest, we are such a creative economy rich community that a lot of times we take it for granted. And so therefore the value that we place on things that are a natural resource may not be as valuable as other individuals place it on that same value. So for us to be able to position the creative economies and the multiple creative economies, that's where we came up with the acronym CREATE, Culture, Recreation, Entertainment, Arts, Tourism, Economy, to make sure that we're hitting each of those sectors and making sure that we're prioritizing those sectors, but finding ways to leverage a community-wide effort and stakeholder effort to make sure that individuals who are within that population are being supported, promoted, and embraced from a business perspective as opposed to just an artistic perspective. A lot of times you're in a bar or a club or, you know, a Downtown Alive, et cetera. You know, this beautiful music or this beautiful artwork is background to what you're doing as opposed to the centerpiece. How do we pivot that just a little bit? How do we get individuals to appreciate that a bit more? So we did a lot of work on looking at best practices locally, statewide, nationally, and internationally, even from UNESCO, and looking at how can we assist in that process to make sure that we're leveraging other areas who have maximized their creative economies and hopefully create these different scenarios or strategic plans to embrace each of those sectors. Hopefully that answers your question.
Yeah, yeah. And in my community work, Marcus, I've learned that so few people understand the plight of an artist, let's say, that the person you were talking about that's the background entertainment, they may not have health insurance.
Right.
Most artists locally don't have mentors that can help them learn to negotiate a rate for their work or to even know what they might be worth, you know, the work that they produce. So I'm a big believer in this. I just wanted to let you say it.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. It makes so much sense, and it's really mm-hmm. important. And, you know, looking at individuals who want to make a career mm-hmm. out of the creative economy. And so, you know, for example, you have, you know, doctors and architects and other professionals in different areas who are still artists.
Right.
How do you, and they are generating income, or you know, artists who supplement their income in other ways. How can we do our best to mm-hmm. make sure that they have the resources and the insights necessary to leverage those resources appropriately and take their work to another level?
Right.
I think it's really important to have the state, to have the city supporting that and mm-hmm. having a strategic plan and delivering on that strategic plan and executing on it is really important. I'm a fan of the community and always will be.
Yeah, I agree. I think that if we can help people use their God-given talents to their highest use, mm-hmm. we're all better off.
Absolutely.
Right. Marcus Brown, I want to thank you so much for being on Discover Lafayette today. Jason Sikora with Raider Solutions, thank you for taping us. And our listeners, thank you so much for following the show. You can listen to this show and all of our episodes at discoverlafayette.net. You can find it on iTunes, now on Alexa. I had a listener tell me you should get on Alexa, so I did that. But anywhere you get your podcast, you can find Discover Lafayette.
That was That's my Alexa. Awesome. I have one back here, yeah.
Well, thank you for joining us. I'm Jan Swift.